Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about game and pigeon. You've probably been using this stuff every day, but didn't know where it came from. Well, now you're going to find out, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 479, recorded April 11th, 2018. Pigeon. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show and play with. Joining me once again today is my lovely and talented co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Randall. It's great to see you over the wires. I'm sitting here in Southampton in the UK, enjoying the fact that it's not raining for a few minutes.
Yeah, so well, it will only be a few minutes, right? I mean, they can't have it longer than that or it violates some sort of federal code. So, I'm in the wonderful downtown Santa Monica. I'm here on site for my on site with ZipRecruiter for my 1 week a month that I'm now kind of scheduling in and out. And as you'll see, we're on the 11th floor. And if you look over my shoulder here in the videos, you'll see that, in fact, there are some very tall buildings. That's the ocean over that way. And so we've got a pretty good view of that. It's fairly sunny today. It was actually 90 degrees here and only 60 and raining in Portland. So I'm really happy I came down this week to get the way out of that. So today's project, very, very amazing, very, very old. We haven't had many 20-year-long legacy projects on Floss Weekly. Most of them are fairly new. Let's just put it that way. I was going to try to do the math in my head, but I have no idea what it is. And the project is called Pigeon. It was originally called Game, and G-A-I-M. And now some of you are already going to know what this means because you're probably using it on your desktop right now while you're watching the show. Hopefully not while you're driving, okay? No using the chat applications while you're driving, especially now with the new laws going in place. So what it is it's a single library that knows how to talk pretty much every protocol that's out there. Like originally it was the AIM protocol, but then they added like IRC and Skype and Google Hangouts and everything, right? So in my Adium client, I can sit here and go, I've got an existence on a new protocol. And I just open it up and I pull it over and I go, oh yeah, okay, new of that. And now that's all in the same window for me. It's really, really nice to be able to do that. And I don't like having multiple things open, like originally having like a Skype chat open over here and a AIM client over here and an IRC client over here. It's really nice to be able to put these all in a managed set of one or two windows on my screen. So I've been very, very happy about it. But it's been around for 20 years. The most recent thing, and we'll talk about that when we get into the show in a moment, when we introduce Gary Kromlich. He'll be coming on in a second to talk about it. He's the current project leader, actually, the current leader coordinator for it. But it's had many people like that, so he'll probably help us describe some of the previous people, including the original person who created it 20 years ago. What do you know about this so far, Simon?
I've been using it for goodness knows how long. I had a very active AOL online messenger profile, and I had an ICQ profile, and it was a delight to have a single program that managed all of them and stopped me from having to have a separate client for every single one. And it was even more delightful that it was free software. So I've been using it for absolutely forever. I'm actually not using it at the moment because I'm now using a Chromebook, and there, as far as I know, there is no Chrome plugin or Android version that I can use. So I'll be wanting to find out maybe if there is a solution that will let me have an integrated chat client for all of those. It's a noble project. It's right up there as one of the most important projects in free software because it's one of the first touch points that you have moving from proprietary into the free software world. It's right up there with LibreOffice as one of the most important programs in the free software universe, in my view.
Absolutely, and its importance cannot be understated. It's just, given that really, as we start decentralizing, especially when a lot of these open source projects are now, spanning three or four continents, having a good, reliable client to be able to do that in a section built around free software, very, very cool. So let's continue this chat about chatting by bringing on our guest for today. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Randall. It's great to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Okay. Cool. All right. That's let's see. When's the last time I went to Milwaukee? Oh, I went to a Pearl conference there about 3 or 4 years ago. Beautiful place. I've definitely enjoyed it there. So give us the 30,000 foot view. Although, again, this is such probably a well-known project. I don't know if I need to do too much overview. But when Pigeon is a solution, what's your problem?
Your problem is like you've got certain friends that want to be on one chat network, others that want to be on another, and so on. And it's like, okay, you've got that one person that's still using ICQ, something like that. And it's like, I want to talk to this person, but I don't want to run the client the whole time, you know, one of those kind of things. So in right. a situation like that, that's where Pigeon really shines. Because that one person, yeah, they'll just be in your normal client where you talk to everybody else. So that helps a lot in that aspect and just keeping everybody connected. I mean, we've got all the social media stuff now, but, you know, people still have their old MSN accounts. AIM's gone now, but, you know, ICQ, maybe they're on an XMPP server somewhere, something like that. And it just really helps to integrate and bring it all together.
Yeah, I like it because I've got some friends on Google Hangouts, and so they want to contact me every once in a while. And so by leaving my Adium up occasionally when they want to ping me, it's right there. I don't have to be open in a separate web window just to watch my clients go that way. So I really appreciate it. And actually, it just occurred to me, what we really need is the same sort of thing as Pigeon is, but for all the much more rich social media now, like integrate Google Plus and Facebook and I don't know what other people are using these days, but it just sort of brings that all together. But that's probably another can of worms that I don't really want to get into today. So let's talk about the history. How did this get started?
The very specific beginning, the project got started by Mark Spencer, also of Asterisk and Digium fame. Back when he was in high school, I forget exactly what college, North Carolina or something, I don't remember. I don't really know his reasoning behind why he started it. I assume it was he was running Linux and he wanted to talk to people on AIM. That's what initially started the project and all that. So then over the years, you know, it started as just an AIM client. That's where the game name came from. It was GTK AOL Instant Messenger. As you might imagine, we kind of ran into some legal trouble with AOL on that for trademark, which is why we eventually changed the name to Pigeon. Probably the early 2000s or so, we started adding support for multiple protocols. So that's when it grew away from just being an AIM client and was then a Yahoo client, an MSN client, AIM, IRC, XMPP, all of that. And that's just kind of like where everything started growing. And that's where we had this long-term idea of splitting the core from the UI so that other people could build clients on top of it. So you've mentioned Adium a number of times now too. So like Adium is similar to Pigeon in that it's an application built on top of what we call libpurple. And the reason the core library that supports all the protocols is called libpurple is because people would abbreviate protocol plugin as PRPL and then pronounce it as a purple. So there's actually been a number of clients that have been built on top of libpurple as well. So there's Adium, the Pigeon project itself ships Pigeon and Finch. A lot of people aren't really familiar with Finch, which is kind of unfortunate. We don't do a good job of marketing it. But it's an ncurses-based client. So, you could SSH to a server, fire up tmux or screen, and then launch Finch, and then you can have your chat there. There's also support for libpurple in Bittleby, which is a IRC gateway. That'll let you talk to all the normal protocols, that kind of stuff. There was another client out of Mozilla, actually, that they just recently decided to stop development on called Instant Bird. Just splitting out that library has actually, made everybody work together. Has made it easier for other people to write clients on top of it rather than them going through and figuring out all the different protocols and all that stuff.
So let's back up a step, because I think maybe people don't understand really what this thing is doing. You would think that all these protocols out there were identical, because it would make sense to be able to share code, right? Apparently, it's far from the case. Can you tell us how different these things actually are?
Sure. So, like, we're kind of seeing it again now, where we're kind of moving into a chat walled garden, where everybody just kind of has their own protocols and does things their own ways. This is the way it was when Pigeon was already started. So, like, AIM uses what's called the OSCAR protocol, which eventually ICQ got moved to as well. And that's just this crazy, obscene network protocol for dealing with chat. Like, if you looked at the docs of it, eyes are going to glaze over, and you're just going to be done with it. So, like, a lot of people have spent a lot of time trying to figure out how that protocol works so they can implement their own clients. And actually, our OSCAR implementation was originally a separate library called libfame, because, you know, it's punny, F-A-I-M. Famous, whatever. Yeah. So people would take their time and figure out how to do all of this and that kind of stuff. So, like the main, what I meant by with like the walled gardens was like AOL, ICQ, Yahoo, they didn't want third party clients on their networks because they consider it to be like a bad user experience because they can't control it. So like when they add a new feature, obviously the third party clients are going to lag. So they would like actively try to block us and stuff like that. So like in the past we've worked with like Trillion and, was it Copete? I think so. To like figure out when they changed the auth protocols and stuff like that. There's a real famous story that's out there about how when MSN, the chat service, came out, where they were adding support for AOL Instant Messenger, and then that created an IM war between MSN and AIM to the point where they would like constantly be changing stuff so that people or so that MSN users could talk to their AIM friends and all that. And that's AOL would try to stop them. They changed like the login mechanism, which of course broke MSN and everybody else. but there's a really good article out there about from an engineer that was working at MSN at the time that just describes all the stuff they did. And what AOL finally did to stop them was they found a buffer overflow in their own code, and they exploited that to verify that it was the right client. So, like, they would buffer overflow their own client, read a piece of the executable, and use that for validation of the program.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so, like, us with Trillion, and I think it was with Trillion, ended up figuring out how to do that. And with some crafty ways, we actually made Pigeon then identify as the real AIM client still, so we could keep working. These are the kind of things like people used to go through. Then we kind of went through a renaissance when XMPP became the big thing. So like that was when Google Wave came out, Google Hangouts, Google Talk originally was all XMPP based. And then Facebook chat was even XMPP based as well. But then everybody started going, okay, well, I can't get my features in as soon as I want. So they started building proprietary protocols on top of them again. And we're back to the walled gardens.
It's sort of like this giant wave keeps going in and out. It was sort of like the whole, do we have central computers or distributed computers? Or do we have now computers in the cloud? Do we do cloud or do we do distributed? Or do we do desktops or whatever? Do we do smart clients or dumb clients? Do we have glass teletypes? Or it's just I tell you, it's been fun actually being around the computer industry for 40 years now, because I keep surprising myself every time I turn the corner on this thing. So would you actually just referred to it a moment ago, the loss of AIM. When was that?
So AOL shut down AIM on December 15th. We knew this was coming. So it was kind of funny because I think it was January of 17, somewhere around there. AOL had decided that they were going to cycle out like all the device and client keys, or developer and client keys. AOL had this long history of stopping people writing third-party clients and stuff like that. But then after a couple of years, they actually created a developer portal where people could build software that talks to AIM and all that stuff. But in January of 17, roughly, I don't remember exactly, they decided they were going to cycle all the keys to get rid of old clients that weren't there anymore, stuff like that. So we went through that with them This was, you might remember hearing in the news that AOL was shutting down third-party clients. That's not what it was. They were just requiring you to get new keys. Now, they never actually ended up doing that, and we're all just kind of like, well, what's going on? You gave us these new keys, but our old ones still work. Should we move? You haven't given us the okay. And actually, I should mention, too, to AOL's credit, they actually reached out to us directly, too. It was like, hey, you guys have a lot of users, so we want to make sure you're still running and all that. But so that whole thing got delayed and delayed and delayed. And that's why when the announcement came out that they were shutting it down, it was just kind of like, oh, OK, I guess this kind of makes sense now. But yeah, I mean, so it was kind of bittersweet for Pigeon when AIM shut down, just due to our history of, you know, that's why it exists. So like we decided, I think it was the day of or the day before, that we were going to do a live stream of a conference call of former or past and present Game and Pigeon members, talking about how we got involved with AIM and Pigeon and all of that. And that was a real good time. We actually live streamed it on Twitch, and just, you know, there's a ton of content there that I need to finish editing.
Yeah. It's always the case. You can always generate a lot more raw material than you have time to polish off, especially if you're not getting paid to do that. So do I recall correctly at one point Facebook chat was in here too?
So that Facebook chat you might be thinking of might have been the XMPP-based one. We do have support for Facebook Messenger. We decided a long time ago that we were going to break API and ABI and release a new version of libpurple and a new version of Pigeon, where we cleaned up a bunch of APIs, did a bunch of stuff like that. Being an open source library, these are things we have to worry about. You know, we can't just break every other project under the sun. So right. we started our 3.0 branch probably about a decade ago. And unfortunately, since we don't do this often, we started just trying to jam everything in there. And a lot of it's not finished. So we've slowly been going through it and stuff like that. But one of the things that got put into the 3.0 branch early was a Facebook Messenger protocol support. So that does exist. It's in our 3.0 branch, but it was actually written by a summer code student, and he did some crazy, crazy things to be able to pull it out of the 3.0 branch and then build it against a 2.x branch. And then that gets released as a separate third-party plugin right now, even though it's actually first-party. So wow. It's kind of this roundabout way, but it works, mostly.
We actually have a question from the chat room, and I think I know the answer to this, but it says, does it Pigeon integrate with, like, audio streams, like WebRTC or IMS or VoIP?
There's a little bit support for SIP-E or I think it's Microsoft Communicator. There's a whole project that spent a lot of time doing that. I can dig the link up and we can share that later. Historically, we haven't done a lot of support for voice and video because most of the developers didn't really use it. Right. But that argument doesn't really stand anymore. I mean, as we're talking on Skype right now. So it's definitely something we're looking at doing and getting into 3.0 as we get it, as we try to polish it up and get it out the door. But as of right now, there's not a whole lot of support for it.
Okay, and Emily has a follow-up question, which I actually consider sort of interesting, is how many of these networks consider their protocol privileged, as in you can't use the protocol without signing their licenses?
I'm not sure, honestly.
you just write the code anyway. Okay.
That's generally what happens. I mean, historically, most of them don't say anything about open access or anything like that, aside from like IRC or XMPP and that kind of stuff. Right. But like somebody wrote a plugin for WhatsApp, and WhatsApp, if they determine you're using a third-party client, they will ban your account on detection. So There's a lot of stuff you got to be careful with that. But yeah, I mean, you could say that via like the Computer Abuse and Fraud Act, accessing an account through Pigeon is in violation of that. But I've never heard a single case of anybody getting hit with that. So I don't know.
Well, there is some case law, which I'm extremely familiar of, where just accessing something is a felony. So I will leave it at that. Go to my Wikipedia page if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's right there in the second paragraph there. So I have a lot more questions to ask, but I don't want to get into the next question until after Simon has had a chance to talk. Simon, why don't you go ahead and take the mic for a bit?
Yeah, I can do that. So all fascinating conversation there so far. Just to follow on where Randall had got to there, I'm quite interested by the fact that you stuff everything in libpurple and don't appear to have the thought of having a general purpose engine and then a lot of plugins. And yet I see there's a whole lot of plugins as well. You know, what is the strategy here? Is your strategy to have a giant libpurple that handles every protocol, or are you going to head in the direction of having just a framework that you plug services into?
So there's not necessarily everything jammed into libpurple. All of the protocols that we support are in the same code base, but they're all separate plugins. Going forward, we're considering splitting out like the proprietary plugins and stuff like that to a separate repository or to separate repositories, just because, like, as we were talking about, like, you know, what is it like to access a network without the official client, stuff like that. There's also been issues that have been brought up where, like, companies won't let their employees work on Pigeon or libpurple because of the potentially reverse engineered code that's in there, stuff like that. So what we're considering doing is, like, taking those actual plugins, pulling them into separate repositories, and then just libpurple itself is just the this is how a plugin, or just a, like, framework for this is how a plugin's built, this is the interface for adding a protocol plugin, this is the interface for voice and video, that kind of stuff, and just trying to modularize it more and more. There's already some pretty clear API boundaries and stuff like that, but I mean, we could definitely go a little bit further. Like right now, the voice and video stuff is a compile time option where we want to try to move more of that to plugins so that, like, you don't have like a Finch client that's a terminal client depending on like GStreamer video plugins and stuff like that, because you shouldn't need to install those when you're just installing on a remote server somewhere.
Right. And I'm just looking at the list of plugins. They're all on developer.pigeon.im in the wiki. Are any of those written by the actual project that they're interfacing with, or are they all written by a third party who just wants to ditch another client on their computer?
So a lot of them are written by developers of the project. And actually, I think the majority are actually written by other people. I'm looking at the list right now too, but like the majority of the protocol support is added by one person who, try as I might, he refuses to take a developer title in the project. but yeah, so like he does a lot of them. He has a real good time like figuring out how it works and just writing the plugins for it, that kind of stuff. But like a lot of the like notification plugins, stuff like that, those are all written by just, you know, random people on the internet. They're like, hey, I want to add this feature to the client because I'm using it already and this would be useful.
Right. Now, it's interesting that one of your motivations for going modular is to avoid legal issues. Of course, reverse engineering for purposes of interoperability is not illegal in Europe. So maybe you should be recruiting developers over here in Europe. but overall, is your project more or less concerned about those issues, would you say? Because you've had a long history of being persecuted by AOL. Are you getting more concerned now that Oracle has made APIs copyrightable and now that people are talking about copywriting protocols? Or do you think that you're in a place where any threats that were going to happen have happened?
I mean, it's tough to say. So when all of the AOL stuff happened, we ended up creating a nonprofit to be where Pigeon can be umbrellaed by it. So like when we were going through the legal trouble with AOL, they were actually going after the lead developer at the time. Which is just like, oh, hey, I don't really want to take over the project because then I just have a big target on my back. But so we created a nonprofit so we would have a legal entity so that any of this would happen. And that nonprofit's actually named Instant Message Freedom. And we've worked a bit with I don't know if ADM's fully under it, under the umbrella or not, but the idea is like we can take these open source clients and stuff like that, and we can give them a way to a way to interact. So like on our wiki for I Am Freedom, we have protocol specifications, how they're built, that kind of stuff. But then also it's to provide a legal entity so that if any of this stuff happens, like the individual developers aren't at risk. This is obviously not something most open source projects have ever had to face. So a lot of people have questioned us on why we have it and all that. But it's, I guess to answer your question, it's more a matter of we've been through a lot of it, but in case something else happens, we have the nonprofit set up so that we can protect the actual developers and contributors.
Right. You're certainly not the only Floss project to have those concerns. I wouldn't want to rehearse other projects that have those concerns because I don't want to paint targets on anybody. But there are things around, other projects around that I know well that have got concerns about litigation. The other thing that kind of interests me, I really wish you supported Signal because I use Signal all the time. And I have to have yet another plugin and another client to use it on my computer. What would you say was the state of privacy and encryption in Pigeon these days? I remember OTR coming up and it being wonderful. Where are things at now?
So we still have the OTR support. That's our go-to end-to-end encryption. To touch base on the Signal stuff, we'd love to add Signal, but Signal doesn't really want clients they don't control on their network, even if they're using the Signal library. Just as part of their security thing, they want to make sure that everything is working the way they think it's supposed to. I don't think they'd go to the point where like WhatsApp does, where they're banning people. So right now we've got OTR. I can never remember how to say it. There's a plugin for what is it? It's like AXIOTL whatever support. There's a plugin for that. I can't think of the name of it, but I can look that up too. Where you can use those for better end-to-end encryption and that kind of stuff.
Right. I see there's a Telegram plugin. You've got the encryption. Are you actually handling encrypted Telegram sessions with that plugin, or is it just in the clear?
I'm not actually sure. I keep meaning to try that one. I keep forgetting to. That's written by a third party. And I don't know off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Right.
I would imagine so, but I would have to actually try it and give it a look.
Right. Well, I mean, that brings me into another problem. I remember the reason I switched to Game and then went to ADM was because I had an infinite number of different chat clients because every friend I had seemed to want to be on a different chat network. And it went away for a while as everybody started using an integrated chat client. And I have the problem back now. Because I'm using a mobile phone and every chat client, I have like a dozen chat clients on my mobile phone. Do you have anything that's going to take the pain away there?
I really hope so because I have the same pain. At some point, we've had a couple summer code students try and unfortunately didn't follow through on writing an Android client. Unfortunately, there's some issues with the iOS App Store, which makes it basically impossible for us to ever release a client there. That's a licensing issue. We're GPL software. You have to grant an exception saying that the iOS App Store is the only one that can distribute your software, which is an exception to the GPL. And we've never had a CLA or anything like that for Pigeon. So we have, what's the last count? Like 500 some odd contributors over the years. We would have to contact every single one of them to get the exception granted. And that's just not feasible. Because most of them, we don't have email addresses for. Some of them could have been 20 years ago. That email's dead. It's not going to happen. So there's been a lot of developments when it comes to language bindings and stuff like that. So in our 3.0 branch, which you'll hear me say again and again and again, that's where all the new features are. We have support for a tool that's called GObject Introspection, which basically makes it so you don't have to write language bindings anymore. Which then you can have a loader that'll load the output of the GObject Introspection for, like, say, Java. So then you can build a libpurple client on Android. And that's something I really wish somebody would step up and start working on, but unfortunately nobody has yet, and my time spent, you know, trying to get that 3.0 release out. But yeah, so it's definitely on my radar, and I'm looking for anybody that wants to take it on, like being able to support them and stuff. But yeah, I share the same pain. I've got like 10 different chat clients on my phone, and it drives me nuts. I was like, yep. I'm the lead dev of Pigeon. I shouldn't have this.
No, I feel your pain. We have just the same pain at on LibreOffice trying to get an Android client written, and we simply can't get an iOS client written. What's happening for us on Android is we have a company in our ecosystem has taken on the burden of doing all the developer registration and dealing with all of the legal paperwork. But on iOS, we just haven't found a pathway we can, even if we could find somebody who would spend the time writing it, we haven't found any way of doing that. The other thing that I wish existed was a JavaScript binding so that I could have a game plugin on my Chrome browser or on my Chromebook. There's nothing like that in the works, is there?
So, like I was talking with that GObject Introspection stuff, it's totally doable. So what GObject Introspection does is it works a lot like the way the documentation tools do for glib-based libraries, except it spits out a type lib. So people have written loaders for Lua, Python, Perl, JavaScript, Golang, Java itself, and all that, where you just point it to a type lib file and it gives you API bindings. So with the 3.0 branch using the GObject Introspection stuff, it's totally doable to have a JavaScript-based one as well, to have bindings for you. And the benefit of that is, so like in the past, we've had Perl bindings and Tickle bindings or TCL, but somebody has to maintain those. They have to keep them up to date. With the GObject Introspection stuff, it's just done. So like we make a change, you update, you have the change in your new stuff. So it's definitely doable, but yeah, I have the same pain as well. Cause, like my go-to personal laptop is a Chromebook. And when I'm on the Chromebook, I'm like, I can't do anything. Your other option there, if you wanted to look at it too, is, if you have a server, you can SSH to somewhere, you could run Finch in Screen or Tmux or something, and then connect to that through the Chromebook OpenSSH, plugin. But, getting like a native JavaScript one, we're getting close to making it possible, but nobody's working on it right now and on actually doing it.
Well, I think I might have good news. If you can spit out bindings that go to things like Perl and Lua and things like that, you could probably very well coerce that into spitting out bindings for Dart. And once you can spit it out for Dart, it'll run using Flutter on both iOS and Android.
Right, but we still have the iOS licensing problem.
Oh, they won't let the library be there. Okay, so we'd have to rebuild most of it. I was close. I was thinking, okay, that's the step to that, and that's the step to that. Okay, so I want to ask the question I was going to ask before, but I thought your answer is probably going to be about 10 minutes based on all your previous answers. So
sorry.
It's great. We love long answers because that means I have to think less, which I don't mind thinking as little as possible for the show, as is apparent by previous shows. So anyway. So AOL protocol had a certain sort of, you know, send this, then receive that, and send this, then receive that, and so on. And IRC protocol has send this, receive that. Well, IRC protocol is well documented. I mean, it's part of a RFC, public standard. But AOL protocol probably wasn't. And maybe Google Talk isn't. Well, that's XMPP, but the particular packets, XMPP is an umbrella, so maybe the particular ways that was used would be proprietary or specialized. Does this have to be done by reverse engineering the protocols?
A lot of it has been, yeah. So, like I had tinkered with Wireshark before I ever started working on the project, and I got a lot better once I started working on the project. So, like, a lot of people do it through trial and error or inspecting network traffic, that kind of stuff. Our AIM support, like I said, that came from LibFame originally. So a lot of people did a lot of work on figuring that out. And the same deal goes for all of the other protocols, too. It's gotten a little bit better recently with all of these like JavaScript based ones, because I mean, the code's there. I should state too, I'm not the one actually doing the reverse engineering. That's like I was saying, we're trying to split or trying to kind of distance that from the core library itself as well. But like, the people that are doing that kind of stuff, they have a toolbox full of tools to help them with this stuff, whether it's like, a man in the middle SSH or TLS proxy, stuff like that. But yeah, so like the protocols that are documented, so XMPP, Matrix, IRC, I'm trying to think, I think there's one or two more, those ones, yeah, we just go to the specs and just start implementing it. But for everything else, it's usually like, okay, do we start with auth, not start with auth? Maybe we just figure out how messages work and like hijack our own OAuth token at first to trial and error, figure out how it works, that kind of stuff. But yeah, so there's quite a bit of reverse engineering there, and at least, you know, trial and error development is another way to say it.
And what kind of testing do you have? Do you have like fully automated suites that can check every new commit you make?
That would be great.
But I think I knew the answer already.
Yeah, our test coverage is unfortunately probably about 1% right now. I'm trying to push a lot more to get that fixed, because it's a real headache when you break everything. And it's like, I would much rather know about this way ahead of time. We are working on trying to at least get nightly builds running again, but not just like a nightly tarball, but a nightly package. So like I was saying, our 3.0 development branch has been in development for so long that a ridiculous amount of stuff has changed. I don't even remember the last count on it. I think at least tens of thousands of commits changed. Thousands of files have changed. Our API change log is like 300 lines long of just functions that have changed or been added. So I realize that whenever we want to actually release this thing, we are going to have missed tons of stuff that's broken. Wow. So one of the things I'm trying to do going forward is making it so that we can have packages available for people to just download and install the test. So they can keep their current Pigeon 2.13 release running and then install next to it a Pigeon 3.0 alpha build. And then not have to worry about like compiling and all that stuff and just actually having packages in that. But yeah, I put a lot of work into that so far. I actually wrote a new tool, a new kind of CI runner to do that and make it possible. But I just haven't gotten all the way through of going from the source code to a package for all the distros. I've gotten there, but I've gotten there for one of our dependency libraries that's not in any of the distributions yet, which is a new library, obviously. But that's kind of like the testing ground to see how it's going to actually work for Pigeon itself. And then that way, you know, we can just spit out packages and people can install them.
As I was researching this, I was looking for your GitHub link. I did not find one. Instead, I found something a little bit more disturbing. Where is this being developed?
So we run everything on Bitbucket. And the reason for that is we don't use Git. I realize that is not the common trend right now.
Right. Because I was just trying to figure out if how many projects we've had in the last 6 months that haven't been on GitHub. And I think it's close to zero.
I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all. With Pigeon being as old of a project as it is, we've pretty much run the gamut when it comes to version control systems. Our code history got a little messed up at one point, but we have our history going back through every version control system we've used. So we started with CVS. We used that for quite a few years. Then we went to Subversion. After Subversion, we used a version control system most people have probably never heard of called Monotone.
I've heard of it, yes.
Okay, and we used that for, I want to say about 4 years or so. And then after Monotone, development stalled and all that, we decided to move to Mercurial. Which is why we use Bitbucket. There's a lot of reasons why we don't use Git. But I think the maybe the easiest one for people to understand is, like, Pigeon as a project is all about bringing different technologies together into one place. And when you look at the consensus that GitHub has right now, you don't have that. You have one technology that everybody uses. Whereas, right. Way back when, like, if AIM would go down because they were having server problems or something, you can just still talk to your friend on Yahoo and your same client. You don't right. have that with everybody on GitHub or right. everybody on GitLab. And just, I don't know, that's probably the easiest way to say it. That's not going to start a big flame war.
Right. So is this a full-time thing for you?
No, unfortunately. I actually work a full-time job. I do this part-time. There's enough work here for multiple people to be working on it full-time, which is why I say unfortunately, because obviously it's a free-time project. It's okay, I'll do what I can when I can, but I can't give you any sort of timeline or anything like that because, I don't know, maybe something's going to happen. I have to take care of that, and I can't work on code today.
Right. So, and did you use the original game before it was renamed Pigeon?
Oh, yeah. So I've actually been involved in the project since 2003. And we renamed Pigeon in 2006. And then just follow through on that. I actually ended up taking over the project in January of 2016. So I've been around this project for 15-ish years. So... wow. It's not even like a passion project anymore. It's just like, yep, this is just the way things are.
And actually, I think we had a question from the chat room, but I wasn't sure when. How did you get involved with open source in general?
So I was one of those like teenagers that was like trying to learn to code on their own and that kind of stuff. And I got into open source more specifically because like I'd gotten tired of the Windows stuff and all that. I started running Linux on like a secondary machine as a server and like setting up a web server, stuff like that. But then I got to a point where I was going to have to, reinstall Windows. Cause back in the early 2000s, you know, like every 6 months you had to reinstall Windows just to keep it running well.
Right.
So I'd gotten to one of those points and I had heard about this nifty new thing called Nopix, which was a live Linux distribution that I was like, oh, well, if I use this and all my hardware works, why don't I just move to Linux? So I booted my machine in Nopix. Everything worked amazingly. I was like, holy crap. So ejected the Nopix CD, installed threw in a Debian installer CD and installed Linux. Now, when I did that, I was using AIM a lot, like a lot. And I was using a plugin called Dead AIM, which would give you toaster pop-up notifications as well as logging and stuff like that. So when I moved to Linux, like I didn't really go like, hey, am I going to have like similar or like comparable apps to stuff that I'm using. I jumped around playing around with a bunch of IAM clients and stuff like that. And that's how I ended up using Game. But then I actually really like bought into open source when I couldn't find a toaster pop-up notification plugin. And then I wrote a plugin, which is called GUIfications, which got me involved in Game and Pigeon development and all that. Like, it started as I just wrote the plugin, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with licensing, so I'm just going to use the license that Game uses. And then just, like, I started working on that. I started getting a user base there, building a community, got involved with Game itself, because it's like, oh, well, I found a bug. Somebody want to fix it? And they're like, I don't have time for that. So then I started fixing bugs and all that, and then it just grew on me. And I was like, you know, this is a much better way to go because, like I was saying, so I started as like a self-taught programmer in my teens and stuff like that. But like one of the things I always struggled with was pointers in C. But when I started working on Pigeon, that's when I finally understood and just completely grokked pointers. So it was like, this is amazing. There's all this code that's out there that's free. You can use it. You can do whatever you want with it. Well, within reason, according to the license. And it's helped me to learn this thing I struggled with for years on my own. And that was just like one of those like light bulb moments of like, this is a good way to go. And I just stayed the course.
Well, that's a really important story about open source. It's like, you know, the ability to open it up, tinker with it, make it do something it didn't do before, make it do something that even probably the original authors didn't think it could do. This is one of the real benefits of open source, where we can stand on the shoulder of giants and develop our own, you know, second stage of whatever we wanted to do. So, a slightly different tack here. My primary client, ZipRecruiter, uses Slack, and I know a lot of other people are moving to things like that, where it's essentially new walled gardens, where there isn't really much of an ecosystem behind that. This isn't a chat added to Facebook or a chat added to AOL or a chat added to Yahoo. This is like the whole thing is the chat room. Pigeon going to be able to keep interoperating with this? Do you think that they'll start cutting off protocols for that, since they're really trying to get a paid audience for those types of hosted applications?
So Slack is an interesting case, just because they've, over the course of what, 2, maybe 3 years, have just come to dominate the chat market. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, like, Slack has gateways for IRC and XMPP. Mm-hmm. They have to be enabled by an administrator and all that. But recently it was announced that they're going to be turning off those gateways and disabling them. Right. This came as a surprise to a lot of people, but for those of us that are, you know, do this all the time, the Slack CEO tweeted about a year ago saying that the single biggest mistake he made in Slack was adding an IRC gateway. So, like, they're definitely trying to find a way to, like, keep it integrated and, you know, have a business model, basically. I think it's what it comes down to. But so there is a plugin for LibPurple, which does Slack. Last I knew, it required an API key, which isn't always the easiest thing to get because it's got to be admin approved and stuff like that. But we've been working with that developer. It's a third-party developer that actually somebody started it, then they moved on from it, and then somebody else took over the project. But we've been working with them to try to find a way to log in like the normal client does, so that then you don't need the API key and all that stuff. But like what you're talking about with like it being like a single interface and all of that, our interface is definitely a product of its time. It was modeled after AIM, like AIM 5, I think, and it definitely needs a facelift. But, you know, like most open source projects, none of us are designers and stuff like that. So we're tinkering. We have some ideas, but hopefully we'll get that figured out soonish.
That soonish thing you're mentioning there, Gary, what is your timeline towards getting a 3.0 release with all that cool stuff you've been working on for a decade?
So when I initially took over the project in January of 16, I was very optimistic and I thought I would have it out by the end of 2016. Well, it is now April of 2018 and we're still not there. So it's hard to put an exact timeline on it, because every time I go in and clean something up and like try to polish something and something like that, I find something else. And the problem is I need to actually just like sit down, figure out our exact pain points, get those documented, and then we can figure out a timeline. And, you know, if there's other broken stuff, so be it. We'll clean it up on the next round. But we need to get more releases out. So like we just released Pigeon 2.13.0. Which doesn't have a Windows build yet. There's another issue for that. And that was a day short of being a year or being released a year after the last version. And that's not good. And like one of the big things about open source is, you know, ship often, ship fast, and yearly updates aren't exactly what I would call ship fast. Especially when I got started with the project, we were releasing, I don't remember if it was every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks, but we used to release at least every 3 weeks. And it's like, oh, we went a year. That's not cool. So, I mean, a lot of this is just juggling, trying to figure out where can we do the majority of work that needs to be done. And then actually, like I was talking before, getting some alpha releases out there, stuff like that, so we can get more people involved and stuff like that. But like one of the problems is we've, for years now, had problems attracting new contributors and stuff like that. And if we did, our retention of them isn't good. so, like, we've got a ton of work to do, and, like, a handful of people to do it rather than like getting pull requests from a bunch of other people and stuff like that. But I mean, ultimately, you know, it's, we're going to get there. How long is it going to take? It's hard to say. Like I was saying before, it's all free time stuff. So it's kind of when it's ready, which, you know, unfortunately is the open source motto of we'll release it when it's done.
Again, over in LibreOffice, it's, you know, you're really end user software. It scratches an itch some developers have got, but none of them have got that itch in their day job. And so getting anyone to actually contribute is kind of hard work. Let's look into that governance a little bit more. So what is your release model? Are you a release when it's ready sort of organization, or do you have a release train that features have to catch the train on the date and there's regular releases?
So way back when we were kind of the feature train where it was, so we used to release on Thursdays every night or every 2 or 3 weeks. I think mostly it was 2 weeks, but sometimes it was three, and it was whatever's here, whatever's ready, it ships. Now as we're, you know, where my primary focus is on the 3.0 branch, like we'll get contributions for the 2.x branch. And it's like, okay, after we get to like a certain amount of them, it's really arbitrary. It's just like, if there's like six items in the change log, okay, we should cut a release. And that's really what it comes down to.
Right. Right. And how many developers would you say you've got contributing? Cause I you're not on Git, so I can't do my usual trick of looking at the statistics.
So right now we're probably about 3 or 4 right now. Trying to think about our pull requests right now, but a lot of that, so like one of them spends a lot of time writing protocol support and fixing bugs and stuff like that in them or in the protocol support, but like when it comes to like the actual core library and stuff, he doesn't do a whole lot, but that's fine. He can do the protocol stuff. That stuff's crazy and breaks my brain. He'll like review pull requests and stuff like that. But yeah, aside from that, we've got about about 3 or 4 people that are submitting pull requests, including myself, and then reviewing them and getting merged.
So you really did just say 3 and not 30 or 300, did you?
That yes, that is correct. That's one of the reasons why this is taking so long. Go ahead.
Is there an army of translators as well, or are you doing all the localization too?
So we actually use a web-based service for the translations, and a lot of that just happens there. People just go ahead and do it, and we're fine. Then we merge in the updates and all that. But that said, we haven't done like a string freeze or anything for 3.0, and the 2.x branch has been around so long where we just don't change strings that often. So most of the translating's already done.
Right. And I remember that way back you created this nonprofit to shelter the developers from any threats. Is that still an ongoing concern, that nonprofit? And what does it do at the moment?
So right now, that nonprofit is actually Instant Message Freedom. It's still very much a thing. Actually, we're supposed to have our board meeting in 2 weeks, I think it is. And we don't necessarily do a whole lot right now, but pay for domains for Pigeon, I think, other stuff like that, run mailing lists and that kind of stuff. But like a lot of Pigeon's like servers and stuff like that have been just provided for free as open source support over the years, that kind of stuff. So the nonprofit is just kind of there to be there, really, in case we get sued or anything. There was some discussion about like, okay, maybe we can help sponsor some meetups, stuff like that, other stuff based on chat, that kind of stuff. Because like a lot of our projects, like I mentioned earlier with Finch, we don't really market our stuff at all, so nobody knows about it. So it's like, you know, maybe we could get some support with like I Am Freedom or something if, you know, people knew it existed.
Right. So do you have any income into the foundation, or is money a dirty word?
There's a tiny amount. Tiny for a corporation. A lot of that is over the years of doing Google Summer Code and stuff like that, the mentors would take their stipend and just donate it back to the project. We make a tiny, tiny, tiny amount off of T-shirts Which again isn't marketed well. I had to ask like three people where the site was to get the t-shirts, to get these guys. But so we get a tiny amount of stuff from there, that kind of stuff. But really, the money's just kind of sitting there as like covering legal fees and that kind of stuff right now, should the need arise.
Right. And is there any way to get donations in? I wasn't struck by a donation link on any of the pages I was researching.
I believe there is. I think it's hidden somewhere, though. I can. Yeah, I'm not seeing it here. Yeah, that's again, this is another thing where it's just we don't market stuff well and we hide the donation buttons. But yeah, I can definitely look that up and get it for you.
Because I'm sitting here, I'm in awe of everything that you're doing with three people on a project that needs 300. I'm kind of worried, honestly, because you're a really important project of free software. You're the first touch that many people who are escaping from proprietary hell encounter, because you run on proprietary platforms and people can use your code through Adium or by running game on Windows. And you're one of the doorways out. You know, it's like LibreOffice. It's one of the doorways out of servitude. And the fact that it all sounds so fragile really scares me. You know, it makes me feel that as a global free software community, we're depending on this goodwill that you're contributing to keep this really important thing running. Is anybody else concerned? Is there anything we can do about this?
If you have ideas, I'd love to hear them. One of the reasons I actually took over the project as well is, so like I said, I took the project over in January of 16. What ended up happening was, years and years and years ago, I was pushing to kind of update libpurple to make it less fragile, because libpurple is really fragile. And I was trying to push to make it less fragile, stuff like that. But the problem was it needed like a lot. Libpurple and Pigeon at the time were moving really fast and that kind of stuff. And it was really hard to try to keep up and like do these overhauls of like hiding struct pointers and stuff like that so that people can't tinker with your data and that kind of stuff. So I got kind of frustrated with the project at that time, and I kind of went on hiatus for a bit. But we ended up having a summer code student come in and do a ton of that work that I was working on. But like he got maybe 75-80% of the way there, which is amazing to do in a summer. Like I'm not trying to downplay that at all. But the problem is then it just kind of sat there and festered. And as we've had issues, as I mentioned earlier, we had issues attracting and maintaining new contributors. The project just came to a crawl. So like I was just talking about how I was disappointed that we went almost a year without a release. Was it 3 or 4 years before I took over the project, there was 3 releases. So that's less than a release a year. And it's just, you know, I took it over because I felt personally responsible for slowing the project down to a snail's pace. And it's just, you know, this project, as you're mentioning, this is a big project. It's a key touch point for new users and that kind of stuff. And I don't want it on my watch that I'm the one that ended up like inadvertently killing the project. So I spent, that's one of the reasons why I got involved and decided to take over and just kind of like, all right, let's get this going. And there's a thing I noticed a long time ago, especially in open source development, that when people see work being done on a project and it's active, they are much more likely to get involved and active on it. So that's been one of my points going forward with Pigeon. That's why I started live streaming Pigeon development on Twitch. Why I'm making sure we're doing pull requests, why I'm trying to be more vocal in the community, making sure we have a Twitter account that tries to post at least, you know, semi-regularly, all of that. Like, you need to show people that you're active, that you're actually working on stuff. Otherwise, they're just going to, you know, go, oh, yep, never updates, nobody does anything, that kind of stuff. And it's just, there's a ton of work that you can do there that doesn't take a lot of time that'll help attract more people. Just, it takes time. Unfortunately,
I've been involved with open source and various funding methods for decades now. I'm actually on the board of linuxfund.org, and I would immediately encourage you to email funding@linuxfund.org. We are sitting on money that belongs to you, so we'll take care of that. But also, I mean, well, it doesn't belong to you yet. You have to ask for it. But you know, small matter of a course, question. Right? Yes. But also, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think I've actually ever heard of LinuxFun.org before, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I will definitely reach out to you guys.
We were the ones that had the Penguin credit card with an affinity program for many years. Unfortunately, the affinity programs have died everywhere. We can't get another one again. So we're just basically now just a coffer that people can put money in on one side and pull out on the other. So but we have we're a bit of a head on that. So we do have some funds sitting around that I'd love to give away. The other is that I would highly suggest, as someone who is very active on social media, that you find that hidden donation link and post it to your Twitter feed.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea, too.
At least get it somewhere so we can find it. So there could be some outcome that moves you forward on this show. Because I share Simon's concerns entirely. This project is too important to go away. So I hope this show gives enough new sets of eyeballs and earballs or whatever they are.
Yeah.
so that people will be aware of just how important this is. And because I'm sure people – there's probably been millions of users of Game and Pigeon, and they don't understand that there has to be a project behind it, and it's not just download software that comes from a magic place. So, We're almost out of time. In fact, we're just running a little bit over time. I got to ask you my two most important questions of the end of the show. What's your favorite scripting language?
Probably Python, but using Go as a scripting language is also cool. So
okay, that works. And what's the text editor you spend all day in?
Now it used to be Vim, but a couple of years ago I started using Sublime Text, but okay. I still use Vim quite a bit as well.
Cool. Well, my audience would get mad at me if I didn't ask those questions, especially with somebody that's such a developer like you are. So anyway, hey, like I said, we're out of time. It's been wonderful. I hope you get a lot new exposure based on being on the show. And I loved hearing about the history of how this all came about because, like I said, I've been an Adium user for decades now, and I'm really happy that it's around and this is all there. So thank you, Gary, for coming on the show and talking to us about Pigeon and the history of the game project.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It was great to be here.
Cool. That was Gary, whose name scrolled off of my screen now, Gary Kramlich. What do you think there, Simon?
Well, you know, I love that project, and it was one of the first free software projects that I really fell in love with, and I'm really keen to find ways to help them to grow from this point. I think that both you and I have got both resources of our own and contacts mm-hmm. who could help, and I think that probably I'm going to be emailing Gary after the show to suggest helping him to maybe get some of those things done. It's a very venerable project, and I'm frankly amazed that there are only three people who are keeping it alive. That is completely jaw-droppingly overwhelming. How about you? What do you think?
No, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy, and it's crazy that this kind of a project that's made this much of an impact is struggling right now, especially in the day and age when we do have these walled gardens coming up, Slack, things like that, and people are forgetting that this thing called IRC existed. You know, it's like only the old guys remember IRC, so it's the kids just aren't doing this sort of stuff anymore. It's great that the project is still. Well, it's sort of on life support, but it's thriving. It's still trying to move forward. I don't know if that's contradictory terms, but I'm very happy that Gary was on today. I had no idea there was such depth to this project and importance to it and current state. So let me quickly run down, because we're running over, run down the upcoming guests. Next week, the Univention Corporate Server, which looks like a lot of buzzwords, server and IT management software to regain flexibility and control. Following that is Chomper, which is basically allows you to whitelist or blacklist various websites and set a timer. And you can't go to the blacklisted ones, and you can only go to the whitelisted ones, however way you want to set it up. A pretty cool little project there. PyPy, which is the Python Package Index. That's repository software for the Python programming language. Seagull, which is a brand new conference. Actually, no, it's in its fourth year now. It's in Seattle, Washington. So I'm going to be heading up there November 9th and 10th. And the organizer for the conference will be on here talking about his show. The Lounge, which is a self-hosted IRC client. It's a fork of Shout, so it's one of these hostile forks. So we'll probably get to talk about why that happens on that show. Might want to ring you back, Simon, for those sorts of things, because you're really familiar with that sort of thing happening. Hubble Stack, it's a modular open source security compliance framework, similar to what we had two shows ago, I think it was, OpenWASP, and provides on-demand profile-based auditing, things like that, and just added to the schedule. Between last week and this week, they wrote me, that's how this happens, React PHP. It's a low-level library for event-driven programming in PHP. At its core is an event loop, on top of which it provides low-level utilities such as streams abstraction, async DNS resolver, network client server. Really, really cool stuff. So this is really interesting stuff. I opened up some new dates, so we've got 8 more slots that can still be filled, but this is all the way out to May 30th already, so we're keeping pretty good. If you have any other suggestions, though, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. You can get that address by looking at the homepage for the show, which is below me here on the screen, twit.tv/floss. We do have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. We took a number of questions from the audience today. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. And as soon as Gary tweets the link to the donation page, I will be retweeting that. So please watch my stream as well. Let's see, what do I got to plug? So I'm going to be at the Red Hat Summit in San Francisco in May. I already got a meetup happening the day before the conference actually starts. So I'll tell you where that is if you contact me via Twitter or whatever you want to do. And then I'm also going to be at the Pro Conference at Salt Lake City in June. I am going to represent Floss Weekly at both of these events and hopefully maybe even give a lightning talk on Flutter at the Pro Conference like I did Dart last year. So good. Simon, anything you want to plug really quickly?
Yeah, I'm going to be in the Bay Area at the start of May, and the Open Source Initiative is going to be having a local meetup, a meet and greet with the full board. That's going to be on May the 1st. Look out on the opensource.org website to get details of that so that we can buy you a free drink. Then I will probably be at OSCON, just trying to negotiate the details of that. I'm giving the keynote at EclipseCon Europe. In the middle of June, the 13th and 14th of June. Do come along to that if you'd like to. And then in August, on August 18th and 19th in Sheffield, UK, we have OGCamp, OGGCAMP.org. Do please buy your tickets. We really want to see you there. We're trying to arrange a fantastic lineup of people. You'll find me on Twitter as Webmink. You'll find me on lots of other places under the same handle, WEBMINK. You're welcome to visit my website at meshedinsights.com, and you're welcome to contact me if you would like to meet up in one of the places that I'm visiting. Randall, back to you.
And speaking of our wonderful chat room, our wonderful regular Eric Duckman's found imfreedom.org/donate.php. So if you're so inclined based on today's show to donate, please do so. It sounds like they could use a bit of more support. And they could maybe even pay some people if they need to, not just be volunteers. But if you want to volunteer, of course, also contacting them through there will also be wonderful. And Simon, it looks like I'm going to miss you by exactly a week in San Francisco. It's too bad, but that's life. Okay. Anyway, Simon, thanks for coming back on the show and providing your usual insight. And
it's been lots of fun. And I wish you safe travels, Randall. Eat wisely. We need you to stay healthy every Wednesday.
I believe so, yes. Try not to get sick again like the couple of weeks in a row there I had. All right, so we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.